I'm Seattle Times political reporter Jim Bruner.
And I'm Seattle Times City Hall reporter Dan Beekman.
Let's talk politics.
Welcome to episode 119 of The Overcast, the Seattle Times News and Politics podcast.
This week, we're speaking with Leah Sottile, independent journalist and the creator of the very well-known podcast series called Bundyville. We're going to be talking with Leah about the investigation into Washington State Representative Matt Shea, someone that she has covered for quite some time.
And Leah, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So maybe we can just start with the most recent news with this report that just has recently come out on Matt Shea. You've been reporting on Shea for years, as have other journalists over in Eastern Washington. To what extent did this new report tell us something new versus confirm what we already knew from reporting that you and others have done?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely confirms a lot of what's been put out there by journalists like myself. It kind of aggregated it all into one place to kind of serve up this really total effect of Matt Shea, of who he is and what he does in his free time. I think that there were several things about it that were surprising. For example, there was this 2015 event in Idaho that was cited as one of the acts of quote unquote domestic terrorism that this investigator thought that he participated in. And that was something that I hadn't seen reported, that I didn't know about. But also, I think that it was surprising to a lot of people in that this investigator, as you guys reported, concluded that he planned and participated in domestic terrorism. Just using those words, I think, were something that no reporter has specifically said.
Right. And for those who might not be familiar, just quick background, Representative Matt Shea, of course, Republican from Spokane Valley, and this report that was commissioned into him by the legislature was conducted by an ex-FBI agent, actually, I think, husband-wife team, I believe, and they're called the Rampart Group. It came out, and now that's led to calls for Matt Shea's resignation, and there are people even talking about his expulsion from the legislature. What's the evidence, Leah, that Matt Shea is more than just somebody who has radical political views and maybe is actually plotting violence in a way that would lead people to call for his expulsion from the legislature?
There's a lot. I mean, in my reporting, and which is a lot of that is in this Rampart Group report, Shea has held pretty extreme views for a long time, as long as I've known about him, since I was at the Inlander and Spokane, the weekly paper there. You know, he has been up to a lot in the 12 years that he's been in office, including, you know, having things like road rage incidents, posing for photos outside of people he's running against their homes and taking photos of their homes. You know, a lot of kind of iffy things like that. But the big things that this report focuses on are the fact that he had some role in the 2016 occupation of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge that was led by Ammon and Ryan Bundy. And which was, you know, obviously a huge news story, that national, international news story, but also that he assembled in 2014, 2 years prior, at their father, Clive and Bundy's ranch in Nevada, that he has continually participated in chats with other people in his flock, I guess, talking about committing violence against liberal protesters, about surveilling people, all kinds of things like that. So I think that it's hard to point to just one thing that's calling for his expulsion. In a way, it seems like the legislature is sort of throwing their hands up. Like, the news on Matt Shea just keeps coming and coming like a fire hose for the last 12 years. And I think that maybe they want to turn it off.
Yeah. And you can imagine the thought of him, if he doesn't get expelled early in the legislative session. You know, it's a 60-day legislative session. He's been kicked out of the House Republican caucus. It's going to be really interesting to see if he wants to show up there. He'll be an isolated figure sitting in the back of the House chamber, probably able to vote. I mean, he's constitutionally elected, but otherwise
it sure sounds like
shunned.
He plans to show up, though,
at this point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He refuses. I mean, everything that he's said so far since this report came out last week is that he refuses to resign and he's not going to do anything any differently.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll like to ask you to go into some of the sort of rabbit holes, at least briefly, on his connections with the Bundys and that reporting that you've done. But first of all, maybe to back up for a second, What can you tell us about sort of where Mache comes from politically and what his worldview is, whether it's political or religious, extremist? Is he a militia guy? Is he a white supremacist guy? Is he a whatever? Are those all the same thing? You know, what is his worldview?
I think Mache is, you could say, and he would say he's firmly nestled within the Patriot movement. So the Patriot movement is kind of this umbrella term to talk about people who hold anti-government ideologies. So often they're people in militias, they're sovereign citizens, so people who believe that they are nations unto themselves, that they don't have to pay taxes and have driver's licenses and things like that. You will also find people with white supremacist ideology under the Patriot Movement banner. As far as Mache is concerned, I mean, he's always been operating from a really fundamentalist evangelical standpoint, that he believes and talks often that America is a Christian nation, that he believes the founding fathers intended it to be that way. And so you really can bounce all of his actions off of that idea, that, you know, when he introduced the Eastern Washington chapter of Act for America, which is, an anti-Muslim hate group, that he believes that's because America is intended to be a Christian nation. So, but he also, you know, is very open and pals around with lots of militia folks. He's continually appearing at prepper rallies, talking about arming up, talking about, you know, the end of the country as we know it, as something of an opportunity for it to be reformed under biblical Christian law. He sees that the government, that there should be no separation of church and state. He's very open that he thinks that the state should be run by the church, and that's how the founding fathers thought of things. And in fact, I was just watching an interview this weekend with him where he talks about that the government is intended to be Christian, and that he views his role as a legislator as a missionary platform. Which I think is interesting, and I'm not sure that the people of Spokane Valley and his district know that he is there to push his Christian agenda forward.
Yeah, he's kind of in the Dominionist camp of right wing thought, like you mentioned.
Absolutely.
This kind of segues to maybe one of the most well known documents, I guess, that has been leaked about Mache, and then I think we want to talk about the leakers whom you've spoken with as well, people who used to support him who have become so alarmed that they have turned on him. It's the Biblical Basis for War Manifesto. Can you explain what is contained in that, and did Mache write it, and how does he describe it?
Yeah, that document is really sort of endlessly interesting in that it was leaked to the media by people who used to work for Mache. That Mache gave it to them and other people in his circle and said not to show it to other people. But essentially, it's sort of this outline of when Mache and his folks believe it's time for war and what sort of the rules of that war are. You know, it contains a lot of different things, but it clearly is this sort of Dominionist battle plan of how to reset up society once, you know, everything falls apart, and who is supposed to live in that society, and how those laws are supposed to be made. But most egregiously, it advocates for if people don't get in line and do things like stop abortion, stop same-sex marriage, stop all, you know, occultism and communism, that the plan is to kill all the males. So it's sort of this kind of Handmaid's Tale-esque, you know, plan for a new society. And, you know, when that document came out, a lot of journalists, including myself, got it. And I didn't run with it because I thought there's no way Mache wrote this. But in fact, when the Spokesman Review put it up, Mache did cop to it. He said, yeah, I did write it. And it's actually a series of notes on a sermon that I heard. And so that was, I think, really surprising as a journalist to see a state legislator cop to it and not say, whoa, you know, I didn't write this. His name wasn't on it or anything like that. But instead he said, yeah, I wrote it. And this is what he believes is just war theory. Now, I've talked to tons of theologians who said this doesn't even resemble just war theory.
And why do you think that that document coming out and him copying to it didn't lead to, you know, more political calls for censure or anything like that, or anything else in Olympia or in his district?
Yeah, I mean, your guess is as good as mine. I think in Olympia, I really don't know. I think that it's pretty egregious, and it's pretty amazing that a legislator could say, yeah, I wrote down this thing that says kill all males and, you know, stop all of these things that we've agreed on as a society are okay. I don't know why there wasn't more backlash. I think he represents an extreme fringe of the Republican Party. But as far as his district is concerned, you know, I mean, I've done lots of reporting in that area. I was a reporter there for a long time. And I think that, you know, Spokane Valley is very different than Spokane in itself, in that it's a very religious, very white place. I think that, you know, you could hold this up to people there and they may say, you know, it seems Christian to me. So they're always, I think, maybe going to vote for somebody who's Christian over whatever else, I guess, is the opposite. I don't know. It's a tough question to answer.
Yeah. Well, and that's some of the sort of Spokane Valley, Spokane context. Maybe we could talk a little bit about the connection to the Bundys and incidents in Nevada and in Oregon. How does Matt Shea and the recent report, the investigation went into this? How does he factor in? Why was he down there in those two incidents, being involved, and why should we care about the fact that he was involved?
That is such a good question, and it's something that I've always tried to find the answer to, of why in 2014 he all of a sudden drove down to Bunkerville, Nevada, and decided to stand with Cliven Bundy in his, you know, armed standoff against federal agents. It's not really clear to me, and in fact, you know, I think that what I can surmise is that Shea really wants to appeal to rural voters in eastern Washington. His district is very suburban. You know, it's that kind of stretch of I-90 from the border of Spokane to the border of Idaho. And but he seems to want to appeal, or seem sort of folksy. And I think that he decided to glom on to this land transfer cause, which is where people like the Bundys would like to see public lands that are managed by the federal government transferred back into state hands, as a way of, you know, cutting the red tape and cutting down on bureaucracy. Still, it doesn't make sense for this low-level state legislator to drive, you know, all the way to Nevada and be a part of that standoff. But that's also where he formed the Coalition of Western States, which was this kind of loose collective of Western legislators that also were advocating for land transfer. But I think, you know, if you look at Shea with like a militia lens, with this anti-government lens, I think it maybe does make sense that he would be at something like that, because he's absolutely somebody who is against the federal government, who is constantly spouting anti-government talking points and believes in lots of conspiracy theories about, you know, shadowy cabals, new world orders running the show in America. So, he showed up at Bundy Ranch and took part in that standoff. And obviously the way that ended was the federal government backed down when they were faced with hundreds of armed protesters, demanding that they release Cliven Bundy's cattle and essentially they had something of a victory, the Patriot movement there. So, you know, with that quote-unquote victory, then the 2016 standoff happens in Oregon at the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. And what we learned from the report is that he was there as well. We knew he was there, but what the report makes an argument is that he was on the sort of planning committee, I guess, for that event.
It's interesting in the Rampart Group report, these kind of encrypted email chains that he was sending with very militaristic planning lingo. It's clear that he views himself as kind of a revolutionary sort of movement, I think. And I found it interesting that, you know, it's not just Matt Shea. There's this network of far right current and former Western state legislators who are kind of sidling up to this movement and believe in its causes. For example, I think former state rep Graham Hunt from Washington State was mentioned. There was a legislator, I think, in Nevada who was mentioned. And circling back to what you talked about, why Shea would go down and participate with the Bundys, I found it interesting listening to your podcast that, you know, the Bundys claim that they were motivated to some extent by their faith, which is Mormonism. Shea is a very right-wing Christian. Those two groups don't necessarily see eye to eye. I would think that he would maybe view them as a false religion. Is it just that their political aims are the same? Have you asked anyone about that dichotomy?
Not specifically that, but I think that the 2016 occupation answered some of that question. So what happened there down at Malheur was you really saw Ammon Bundy and his brother Ryan Bundy bring together these groups of people that traditionally haven't necessarily agreed on things. So you had, you know, to a very small extent, you had some people who are ranchers. Very few ranchers came to support that cause. But you had people who were, you know, anti-government, you had militias, you had white supremacists, sovereign citizens, all these people in the Patriot movement that maybe disagreed on one or two things, but I think could unite under this cause. And the Bundys themselves sort of provided this very likable PR face, I think, for the movement, that they presented themselves as just these, you know, poor ranchers that are trying to make a living and, you know, the government just won't get off their back kind of thing. When really that's not actually, I think, the story behind things. That's just sort of like a story that is told and then repeated again and again in media that doesn't understand what's going on there. So I think that it would be enough of a similar worldview for Shea to be a part of it. But also, you know, I have to mention with Matt Shea that his sort of spiritual advisors are these folks up in northeastern Washington named Barry Bird and Ann Bird, who are, you know, were foundational framers of the Christian identity movement, which we can get into. But a lot of their belief system really kind of echoes fringe Mormonism, despite the fact that they also are Christians. So I think that, you know, at the fringes of Christianity, at the fringes of Mormonism, at the fringes of really anything, you see a lot of people kind of agreeing on certain things. And in this case, it's just an anti-federal government worldview.
Well, and I do want to get back to the Christian identity in a second. But just before that, you know, you were just talking about how you knew and people knew that Shea was in Bunkerville and at Malheur. I think, though, maybe what was slightly different in the report was to the extent to which it talked about him being involved and actually sort of planning at least the second incident, as opposed to just going down there with a delegation of lawmakers to sort of try to negotiate or support or broker something. So, and it seems like maybe what happens in Olympia may hinge somewhat on whether he was, you know, what exactly his role was. So, you know, what do you know now about how involved he was as someone planning the standoff?
I think that I recall in the early days of the standoff, Oregon Public Broadcasting breaking a story that Shea and other members of the Coalition of Western States had showed up at Judge Steve Grassley's office down there in Harney County in Oregon and sort of made demands. And the reporter who worked on that story posited that Shea specifically seemed like he was on this kind of, you know, what I keep referring to as the planning committee, I guess, for Malheur. But, you know, at the same time, last week, we have lots of things coming out of Ammon Bundy's, you know, mouth saying that Shea actually had nothing to do with it, but that he had calls with him, but that he planned it on its own. Sort of hard to know because Matt Shea is not saying, yes, I helped plan this thing. Like he did say, yes, I did write the Biblical Basis for War document. And you have Ammon Bundy saying, no, he wasn't a part of it. So it's really it's hard to know beyond, you know, what the the report found, what actually happened.
Yeah. And what about the Idaho incident that you referenced, you know, as we started to talk and his role in that?
Yeah, that was a thing that I had never really heard about. And actually, I don't know a ton about it beyond what was in the report. I'd never really heard about it before. But I think that it does represent several of these sort of flashpoints between 2014 and 2016 around the West where militias were getting involved in private property disputes or various issues. There was one here in Oregon. I actually thought this thing that happened down in Southern Oregon at a mine that was a real militia flashpoint, I expected that to be in this report, and it wasn't. So, but I think it, you know, it shows that this Northwest Western Patriot militia groups, you know, are kind of all looking widely for reasons to confront the government. And so, yeah, the thing in Idaho in 2015 was what seems like just another one of those.
Yeah, it almost seems like they're welcoming or trying to provoke an incident that they can blame on the federal authorities for cracking down, and it would lead to some kind of, you know, new Ruby Ridge or Waco incident. I wanted to circle back to mentioned earlier the allies of Matt Shea, Jay Pounder, and I think Tanner Rowe, because I think there's a place where it shows how Matt Shea diverges even from some very conservative voices in the Republican Party. Also Spokane Sheriff, Spokane County Sheriff Ozzy Knezovich. But can you talk about your talks with Jay Pounder and Tanner Rowe and why they came? What was their relationship with Matt Shea, and why did they become so alarmed that they decided to turn on him and leak all of this material, damaging material, to the media?
Yeah, so both men have pretty different and interesting stories. So Tanner Rowe is kind of big, beefy, libertarian guy who was asked by Jay Pounder, who worked for Matt Shea as something of kind of a security on his security team. He was asked to provide security at a 2016 election night event in Spokane Valley. And you know, what Tanner told me was that Shea and other Republicans were maybe kind of paranoid that if they won, or that if Trump won, that there was going to be some sort of Antifa presence, even though there's really been not much Antifa activity in Spokane Valley or Spokane. But they sort of had this paranoia and wanted to have armed security at their event. So that was Tanner. And the event, really nothing happened. Tanner just sort of stood at the door. But what Tanner said is that night when Trump won, he sort of saw this kind of unbelievable, he said it was sort of like in the air, this sort of, oh my God, our guy won and our problems are gone, and this sort of like religiosity around who had just been elected president, but also that Shea won. And so he thought, this is really weird. I don't think I really want to be involved with this. And kind of that was it. So he just worked for Shea for one night. Whereas Pounder worked for Shea on his security detail for several years. And, you know, I think it's important to talk about the fact that this is this low-level state lawmaker from Eastern Washington who has a security detail, which is pretty odd. But nonetheless, I think Shea has proven himself over the years to be a pretty paranoid guy. So he employed Jay in some capacity to help him, you know, be safe and plan meetings or whatever else he did. But what freaked Pounder out about Shea, which what turned him, was when he saw Shea invoking Christianity as a reason to take over government, and this sort of dominionist mentality that he said he saw Shea leaning into more and more over the years. And it was really when he was handed that biblical basis for war document and told to keep it quiet that Pounder said, you know, in his mind, he knew he couldn't be a part of it anymore. So Rowe and Pounder kind of got together and talked about, what do we do with this? Do we show people? Is, you know, how serious is he? And ultimately, Rowe was the one who released the biblical basis for war document because Pounder was afraid of any backlash that Shea would, you know, would have. He, you know, he has a family. He had also been kind of existing in this pretty paranoid world of Matt Shea's for a while. So I think he was really scared of what would happen if he went to the media.
Yeah, subsequently, I think they leaked the chat logs or whatever, however you describe them, where
tons of them, yeah.
Yeah, and was it Pounder who had participated in some of those, you know, enthusiastically at some point, talking about surveilling political opponents and mailing wolf testicles to some official, which didn't, I guess, didn't happen.
To environmentalists or something,
yeah,
right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so he really did agree to a certain point, but it was this sort of bastardization of Christian belief, that he, a very religious person, thought, okay, wait a second, this is not what I signed up for. The rest he was seemingly okay with.
And you mentioned the birds before and marble. So how does that mm-hmm. fit in? I think you said that they're sort of a touchstone for Shay.
They absolutely are. So Marble Community Fellowship is a very small religious community and church up in Stevens County, Washington, which is, you know, for your listeners, it's very close to the Canadian border, very far in the northeastern corner of Washington State. And they set up this church after, in the 1990s, after they had long been members of a even smaller church called the Ark, which was a Christian identity church. The basic, you know, to boil down Christian identity, is the white supremacist ideology, and that believes that Jews are the spawn of Eve and Satan, and that the actual chosen people are white Christians from Great Britain, Scotland, etc. So Anne and Barry Bird really were early adopters of that idea, I guess, if you could say it that way. And they also were in a band for a long time called Legacy that was a big, big part of the white supremacist, you know, kind of touring circuit in the 90s.
Was this their bluegrass band that you played?
It was a bluegrass band.
An outtake of in Bundyville. Yeah.
They're very devoted musicians. They're and a lot of people who actually joined their community of Marble said that they were so compelled by their music. They just loved it and loved being a part of that. But really the message behind their music, and it's on their album art, it's in their lyrics, was always this idea of Christian identity. And they were, the other thing to be noted there is that when the Aryan Nations was still in North Idaho, so it's still about 2 hours from Stevens County, that Richard Butler, who ran the Aryan Nations, was also a Christian identity preacher of sorts. So when that compound, you know, went away and fizzled out, that those people sort of dispersed into, you know, Montana and Idaho, Eastern Washington, Oregon, and that really what the Byrds kind of set up with their quote unquote Christian covenant community of Marble was this kind of Christian identity inspired church. So Matt Shay, bringing it back to him, has long had associations with Anne and Barry Bird, with Marble. Every year he goes to speak at this big kind of patriot 4th of July event that they have there that's closed to the media called the God and Country Days. And in fact, they've been having that festival for at least 10 years. And Matt Shay has always been, he's been there every year. And there's no other person who's been a part of it so exclusively than Shay. And this is also where Matt Shay has really shopped his State of Liberty idea, which is his idea to secede the eastern half of Washington State into its own 51st state. And that's something that
called Liberty.
Very exciting. Yeah, called Liberty. And that's very exciting to the folks at Marble, this idea that they could set up their own Christian government and that sort of thing is a big part of that.
With presumably the best baseball team, softball team in the new 51 states. Tell us about the softball anecdote in Bundyville with regard to the Byrds was really telling, fun, but very interesting.
Yeah. So I'd heard a lot about Marble and a lot of people said, you know, this is a cult, it's a cult. And I think that there's a pretty high bar, you know, as a reporter to saying, you know, something is a cult. But in my reporting over the years, I sought out several people who lived there either currently or in the past. And this one man told me this anecdote about how he moved his whole family there and they loved it. It was just this lovely community. But also a part of living there was playing on the church softball team. And there was kind of something of an A team, and there was a B team, and then there were the kids teams. And so this man had several kids, and so he would go to his kids' softball game and oftentimes wouldn't go to the A team's games to cheer them on because he was going to his kids' games. And he said that when he did that, a big church emergency meeting was called where Anne Bird told the congregation that you need to be supporting the A team. You can't go to your children's softball games, that a part of living there is supporting, the AA softball team. And by doing that, they can show the whole community that they're the best. If they're the best softball team, then they're also just the best church. So it's something of a funny anecdote that we put in the podcast as a way of showing how the small kind of cracks that emerged over time, I think, for people who live there, where they were like, well, that's weird. Okay, so I can't go see my kids play softball because I got to go see the church leaders play softball. So that was one of many things that we used to sort of show this cult mentality. And obviously, there's much more egregious examples than that.
Yeah, and we're kind of joking about these quirky aspects of the bluegrass or the softball, but obviously, this ideology is pretty scary. And so what's the— we were talking before our call with you about sort of, how to explain the broader context for all of this stuff and why it matters in terms of, is this just, one fringy guy in, far eastern Washington and some weird cult-like communities up in northeastern Washington and in small rural areas, and why should we care? But you go into, in your reporting, in your podcast, into sort of the broader context across the region and across the country for this, and sort of tie in, Donald Trump into this to some extent. And can you talk about that, sort of why this stuff matters beyond just sort of as a creepy novelty?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think that, as far as Matt Shea is concerned, I think that for a long time, for almost as long as I've been a reporter in the Northwest, there's been sort of this idea that, what is the point of reporting on Matt Shea? Like, he's just this low-level guy. He really can't get a lot done on his own. But what I think I found with Bundyville is that what Shea is doing, specifically with his aligned, this Dominionist idea in the place of Stevens County, which is not his district at all, but it's a place that he really recruits and shops this idea for the State of Liberty, is that he's picking up on an idea that is not his own. It's not original, but where it is original to are people within the white supremacist community. So Richard Butler at the Aryan Nations wanted to see Eastern Washington and Northern Idaho formed into a 51st state, a quote unquote white homeland. Bob Matthews of the Order, that comes over into Western Washington in the 1980s. He also wanted to see a white homeland built in the Northwest. Chevy Kehoe, who grew up going to the Ark, the same church as Ann and Barry Bird, also wanted to see a white homeland. So this idea of seceding a 51st state really hasn't been shopped by anybody but white supremacists in the past. So it's a way of, my reporting on Shea was a way of taking this story that I had seen, other news reporters at the Inlander when I was there struggle with, that there's a state legislator who won't talk to reporters, who has these really radical ideas. And, this idea of just not talking about him, clearly he's not going away. But also I think that when people in big blue cities scratch their heads over how Donald Trump could get elected, I think that you can look to somebody like Matt Shea and see this long support that he has had over the course of 12 years as a way of understanding that these ideas about Christianity, about white supremacist ideas, are things that are still they're very much there, and they're not even in hiding. That Matt Shea is so out and proud about these ideas. So when I wrote a story about him for Rolling Stone in 2018, my reason in doing that was to say, here is a person that can help explain part of some of these things we're hearing from Donald Trump. And you will see now with Shea, in the days after this report has come out, he's just using Trump's talking points now to defend himself. It's a witch hunt, and this is just like impeachment. And he really is comparing himself as a sort of martyr like Trump is.
Right. And, to add to what you said, until some of the most shocking info started coming out about Matt Shea, he was part of Republican leadership in the state house. So it's not like he was completely a nobody. To everyone listening, of course, you should go check out Leah's podcast, Bundyville. And thank you very much for joining us on the Overcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's it for episode 119 of The Overcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our guest, Leah Satilli, the creator of the Bundyville podcast. Thanks to KNKX and Simone Alisea again for having us in the studio to record.
If you have ideas for the show, people that you think we should interview or feedback to give us, you can reach us on Twitter at dbeekman at @Jim_Bruner. You can email us at seattletimesovercast@gmail.com. And until next time,
have a cloudy day.